Stay a while. Stay forever.
Hello, everyone. I'm Rob.
And I am also a Rob, but a different one.
Yes, and welcome to Marmalade, our monthly look back at the games that we've been playing over the previous month.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of insider secret here. In past months, it's got to like the past 4 days, and hang on, got Marmalade coming up. Oh hell. I better play something. No. But this month, I've been a good boy and actually played things.
Yeah, I was playing things for a good portion of the month.
Yeah, because we're at this funny spot, aren't we? It's at the end of a generation. It's kind of not here, not there. It's a little bit in between. And a lot of the games that we've been playing recently have been indie things. We do play that sort of stuff anyway, but at the same time, it's all there is, really.
Not only that, there's been a lot of sales on with regards to indie games, because I don't think they're going to be carried over to the new console.
Oh, no, they are. I mean, and you look at the description on the PlayStation Store in particular, it says to upgrade this, you need to upgrade the software, update the game, and it'll play.
Will it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It won't have the same upgrades. I think it might load quicker, but that's about it. It won't have any sort of upgrades that any of the more high-profile games do.
I've noticed that several of the games that I've downloaded don't have the ability to upgrade on the PS5. And I'm thinking maybe the developer is no longer around.
In the case of one of your titles, yes, that's true.
That's what I'm thinking. And so it won't get updated, I think.
Yeah, but we're swinging around. We're swinging the fences. We'll just jump right into it. I'll go first.
Gonna.
With a remake of Katamari Damacy.
Damacy.
Whatever. Katamari Damacy re-roll.
How was it for you?
I'll explain it. In this, there's the prince of the the king of the universe, who gets a bit happy and destroys loads of stars. And there's little bits of story in between of two kids and their mom, and the kids say, the TV says, the stars have been got knocked out. And the mom says, don't be silly, of course that won't happen, that doesn't happen. But no, the prince of the universe did it in his cracker-shaped... A cracker as in Christmas cracker. I know that word has connotations, and that wasn't what I was going for. His Christmas cracker-shaped head and his rainbow vomit sends one of his sons off to Earth to roll the mantis, the remote balls. He is basically a little boy, but he also has got a Christmas cracker-shaped head, and he pushes this ball that picks up everything.
Yep.
And you've got to roll it into bigger balls and bigger balls and bigger balls and bigger balls to replenish and replace the stars which your dad in his infinite wisdom has destroyed.
Yep.
Few things. The music's amazing.
It always has been.
Yeah, it's kind of like Saturday night, goofy 1970s Japanese jazz J-pop extravaganza.
Yep.
All of those things that I use to describe it are accurate. And it's one of these games. There's another one out on the indies called Donut County, which you just sort of suck things into a hole. This is the same. You just roll things into a big ball. It's that sort of... It's using cleanliness as a gameplay thing, and you're just tidying things up and getting it all in one place and getting it all sorted.
Who was that Japanese woman who was obsessed with cleaning, had a TV show?
I don't know, but she had a Netflix show, didn't it? Everybody was mad about, you know, looking at something and what's the usefulness of it, and if it doesn't have a use or it doesn't bring you joy, you get rid of it. Marie Kondo, I think her name was.
Yeah, Marie Kondo, that was it. She'd be... I think this is her type of game, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, on the pure face of it, I absolutely adore it. It's not changed what it is. But it's the problem with some older reissues. You realise that certain things have changed for the better. And the thing in particular... I mean, I say this, but it controls really bad. The control system is awful. To move the ball, you got to push both left and right stick in the same direction. If you hit something which is living or bigger than you, you'll bounce off it, and things off your giant trash ball will bounce off it. So get in a different direction, you have to press up on one stick and down on the other and sort of swivel on the ball until you're in the right direction.
Yeah, you do know that what you're describing is tank controls.
It is tank controls.
That's literally how you drive a tank. I mean, that quite literally, where the tank controller sits there with two levers, push both forward to go forward, push one forward and one back to basically turn right, the other one back to turn left. That's how they used to drive tanks.
It's not intuitive though, as a game thing, because over the interim between this and now,
yeah,
we've been coded to think that one stick is control the character, one stick is control where we look.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a disservice to the game at all. I still absolutely love it. It's nostalgia. It's one of these games where it's an easy platinum, if that's of concern to you. But it's one of these games where you can just put it on and it's not any conflict. There's not any stress. You're just creating big trash balls for your weird space dad.
That's a big poster quote right there, isn't it?
Yeah. And this guy's done some weird games in the past. He did Nobu Nobu Boy, which is about making a space dog thing with two heads, one on each end of the dog, stretch out so it's longer and longer, so you've got a massive space dog. And I think he did Wattam as well, but I didn't play Wattam.
See, it's the way you say Nobu Nobu Boy.
Are you saying I say it somehow suggestively?
It does sound like that.
I would never do something suggestive, Rob. I'm not that sort of person. I don't do rude jokes. Yeah.
Check out his latest Alternatives 2 video. But for Immortals Phoenix Rising.
But the gist is, it's one of these things where I think nostalgia and the sort of the pleasures of just the gameplay loop paper over the cracks of the weird ass control system.
Yeah, I can kind of understand why they went with the tank control system, because once you've got the ball to a certain size, this is really difficult to say without any of it not sounding euphemistic.
You push your ball around and things stick to your ball, you know.
Yeah, well, you push your ball around, things stick to your ball gets bigger, and once your ball has reached a certain size, it's going to be difficult to control.
Yes. But yeah, I mean, it's Katamari Damacy. I love it. It's got a special place in gamers' hearts of a certain generation, and yeah, to see it back, well, even if it's just a reissue or a remake, I'm all for it, really.
I mean, the English title of it, when it originally came out, was We Love Katamari.
Which isn't a bad title either, because we do love Katamari.
Yeah, exactly. But the King of the Universe and the Prince of the Universe, I never put their heads in the shape of like a Christmas cracker. I always thought it looked a bit more like a wheat crunchy, you know, those crisps.
Regardless of what it looks like, you've got a funky shaped head and he vomits rainbows and he talks.
Yes,
he's kind of like a petulant 6-year-old if he was the King of the Universe. I mean, there's like levels where there's like a time limit. It says, yeah, you can't expect the King of the Universe to wait longer than 9 minutes. Screw you, you're the King of the Universe. You can do whatever you want. Give me time limits.
See, now I've got this bizarre crossover between Katamari Damacy and Queen, as in the rock band Queen, with Freddie Mercury just on just off to one side going, here we are, born to be kings. We are the princes of the universe.
Okay, now that's, you've killed that, so that's Katamari Damacy, and yeah, that's out. I'd recommend it if you played it before in the past.
Yeah.
And give it a shot if you haven't. It's unique.
This is the thing. You've gone with Katamari Damacy, and it's a game quite literally about nothing in particular. I mean, the story mode is more of a placeholder in it.
Well, it's just gag. It's a gag reel.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm going to swap the order around that I was going to go in, because I actually have been playing Air Memories of Old. Well, it's an indie game that's on PC and Switch, Xbox One and PS4. Anyway, Air Memories of Old, it's by Forgotten Key. It came out originally in 2017 and it was published by Daedalic. And it's quite literally a game about nothing. Right, you know how some games want you to go out and explore and have an adventure, and you have some kind of reward at the end of it.
Yeah.
So you'll get better equipment, you'll get experience points, you'll have to do this and that and the other. Air is an adventure game with no... where you have kind of a vague goal of going to visit various temples, and there is kind of an underlying story dealing with the darkness and blah, 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 blah. The usual fare.
That makes me think of that game on PlayStation 5 and PlayStation 4. What's it called? The Pathless.
It is a bit like that, I suppose. See, Air is an adventure game in kind of the truest sense of the word. You get to explore the world in a way that I haven't really seen since Skies of Arcadia. Right, you know how in Skies of Arcadia you go to different islands and land on different islands and explore different islands in your airship?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Air, you can do that as well. There's loads of different floating islands in the sky.
Is this that Air with an E? A-I-R-E?
A-E-R.
Oh, okay, I'm thinking of something else then. Okay, but continue.
Yeah. So you can basically... You play as the character of Ork, A-U-K, right? And you can travel... You start off the game in the Temple of Kara, and you get the lamp, and then things start collapsing around you, and then you leave, and your elder says, well, I'll investigate what's happened with these ruins. You make the pilgrimage to the three temples of Kara, and then, you know, that's it. Job done. Yeah?
Mm.
That should be the end of it, but for some reason, you've got the light of Kara, so something has to happen, and you have a vision of something foreboding in the darkness. You can now, with the light of the lamp, see the remnants of kind of the ghosts of the past, memories that have been left behind, which is why it's called Memories of Old. And you can use those to help you figure things out. It's like a big kind of environmental puzzle.
So what you basically said there, you went blah, 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 fantasy nonsense. Blah, 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 fantasy nonsense. Blah, 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 yeah. Fantasy nonsense. Blah, 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 farming.
No, there is no farming.
I know, I think my mind just put that in there just to spice things up.
There is no farming in this. What there is a lot of flying, and it's wonderful flying as well. There's a lot of kind of just going off and seeing, what's that over there? Oh, I saw something out the corner of my eye. I wonder what that is. And just having a good old look around. It's like going for a walk on a nice summer's day. It's like, when I say it's a breath of fresh air, it literally is.
You've become such an old person, haven't you, with your game taste, Rob?
Thing is,
a bit of farming, a nice old look around, a bit of a natter with the neighbours.
Yeah, but when you look at the other two games I've been playing this month, Air is kind of the palate cleanser I needed.
Okay.
When you look at the other two games that I've been playing this month, the other two games that I've mainly been playing, you know, primarily, in amongst others, but Air is literally the palate cleanser I needed. And I was sitting there just going, oh, so I saw you could fly on this thing. When do I get to fly? Got through the intro bit, and then he said, right, you know, jump twice to transform. I was like, don't I get a bird? Turns out, I am the bird.
Have you seen that game on the Xbox? It's a launch title in the Xbox Series XS. The Falconeer.
Yeah.
I really want to play that, you know.
Yeah, you should play Air. Air is very similar in terms of its flight mechanic, and I really like the flight mechanic in Air. I think that it's very understated, and the camera is very twitchy, so be careful of the camera. But aside from that, it's a lot of calming when you just want to just fly around and do nothing.
You make this joke constantly where you're sat on your porch and you say, get off my land, to everything. I think your game choices are leading you in a way where you're basically living your best life of sitting on porches and telling people to get off your land.
See, now you got me, because I actually did enjoy that game as well. You didn't play that game, did you?
No.
It's an indie game about an old guy with a shotgun sitting on his porch, and aliens start invading, so you have to shoot them all before they get to your house.
That's a you game, isn't it? Like okay.
So yeah, Air Memories of Old. It's I didn't honestly know what to expect from it. I bought it in one of the PlayStation sales, because I played it on PS4 Pro, and I bought it in one of the PlayStation sales. Didn't have any clue about what it was. Just saw, ooh, a lot of people like this, I'll give it a try. And that was it. I went into it completely blind.
Well, it's nice that your curiosity actually worked, because last episodes, you played, what was it, Lovecraft versus Tesla?
Tesla versus Lovecraft, which now is being released on the Switch, I think it is, as Tesla Force.
That's a bad name.
Yeah.
I can understand it, but... okay.
I think it's the same game.
Yeah, maybe. But okay, I'm jumping on. This is going to be a quick one because there's not a lot to say about this. But I always say that and I end up talking about 15 minutes about it. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But this is Thumper. This is a rhythm action.
Right, okay, good. I was just going to check. Right, so we're not talking about Bambi here, yeah?
No. My sister had a rabbit when she was a kid and we named that Thumper and it kept on trying to run away.
Yeah, because that's what the rabbit in Bambi's called as well.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, Thumper, you play a sort of beetle who is on a track and you've got to stop the monsters from eating it. Oh my God, this is a hard game to explain. Right, so you're on a track and you press X when there's something ahead of you on the track and it makes a sound, like a rhythm action game. You hold X and you go through these little sticks and they'll make like a drum beat sound. You go around corners, it'll make a specific sound. You go around larger, longer corners, it'll make a specific sound. There's other bits where your enemies will lay a plant and you've got to push forward and an X and you sort of jump over it. And out of context, outside of the images on screen, just the words, what I'm saying, that are coming out of my mouth that are being made by my mouth, my lips and my tongue, they make no sense.
No, it sounds like you're on drugs.
But with the visuals, it makes perfect sense. And you add that sort of gameplay system, and you put horror themes in there. It's kind of Lovecrafty.
I mean, it's one of those games where, on paper, it quite literally... I can imagine the checklist on paper. It's like, so, play as an insect, check. On rails, check. Make noises when you move around stuff, check. Lovecraft, let's crowbar some Lovecraft in there,
yeah,
check.
And
anyway, right, now we've got to make a game.
The music's really good as well, so you're bopping your head away and you think, oh no, I died. Damn you, game. I'm shaking my fist menacingly as I say that.
And you say I'm old.
It's a Simpsons reference for me. The thing is, this is also a VR game.
I can imagine in VR, it probably... Because I've seen the trailer for Thumper, and I always thought it was one of those games where... that I wasn't sure if you'd enjoy it, being a rhythm action game.
Yeah, I'm not big on rhythm action games, but if I had a VR headset... All I could really describe it as is if you had magic mushrooms and you were on a really, really bad trip. That's pretty much what this would be on VR.
I'm staying silent on this one.
Yeah, he's probably had a bad trip somewhere in his younger days. But yeah, it's unique, you know. It's not the sort of game that you can play for a long time because it batters your head. It thumps your head.
Yeah,
but it's enjoyable for what it is. I mean, I got it for £3 on the PlayStation Indie Store, and it's entirely worth it for that. It's just entirely worth it, especially if you've got a VR headset, because this is just whackless. This is out there. This is the sort of thing which I've always wanted the rhythm games to do, because rhythm games are always by the peripheral. Spend loads of pounds on music that you think's garbage and in those rock albums that you get every Father's Day because apparently your dad, like everybody's dad in all the world, likes nothing more than Guns N' Roses on endless repeat.
Do you know what you sound like? It sounds like the only rhythm action games you've played are rock, like Guitar Hero and Rock Band.
But the thing is, that consumed like the rhythm action arena for years.
There were loads of rhythm action games, and okay. Yeah, a lot of them did involve you buying extra tracks and stuff like that. I will admit that was a curse from them.
It did consume the market. It did consume the area for a while.
Yeah,
can't deny that.
There were quite a few of them, mainly kind of left field titles that came out of Japan. I think were the ones that didn't fit the mold, and you didn't need. I mean, stuff like Elite Beat Agents and
that. Yeah, that's going back ages. That Rob, that's not recent.
Yeah, I know, I'm just saying. See, there are certain games that I'm contemplating. I think I have an idea for Impossible Mission.
Yeah. But this is... It's fun, you know, in short doses, which I think is what all rhythm games should be.
Yeah. See, on the flip side, I haven't gone down the route of VR or 3D or anything like that. I went 2D instead. And we already know from one of the other videos that we've had out on the channel, I've been playing Sundered.
From the people who made Jotun, which is about a guy called Joe who's really fat. That's not really what it is. It's not Norse mythology. That one.
Yeah. Sundered is by Thunder Lotus Games. It's came out in 2017 on the PS4, but the Eldritch Edition came out on in 2018 and 2019, and the Eldritch Edition is what I've been playing. It's a Metroidvania. It's an action platformer, for want of a better word, and it's one of those weird ones where you have kind of a vague plot. There are horror elements, and the thing is, everyone crowbars in Lovecraft when they talk about horror these days. It seems to be the order of the day. It has to be a Lovecraftian horror, otherwise it's not classy or, you know, it's not worth anything. I'm like, look, no, what about it doesn't have
to. What about Shirley Jackson? What about Edgar Allan Poe? What about Edgar Allan Poe, who was a Japanese ripoff of Edgar Allan Poe?
Didn't Edgar Allan Poe only write detective stuff?
Yeah, but he was horror adjacent.
I would have actually gone with Clive Barker.
I just like saying his name, Edgar Allan Poe. I'm sorry.
But anyway, there are plenty of other horror influences out there. Edgar Allan Poe is a good choice, you know. But, you know, everything has to be this kind of Lovecraftian thing. And yes, Sundered does have some Lovecraft-esque horror elements. But then again, that's mainly involving... I mean, I might as well just turn it around and say, no, it doesn't have Lovecraft-esque horror elements. It has horror elements... It has Overfiend-esque horror elements. Let's add some Japanese anime in there, shall we?
Yeah, that's not.
If you want to add, if you want to throw tentacles in there,
I think I'd rather have the Lovecraft influence. It's a bit more family friendly.
Exactly. And was that a phrase you thought you'd say this morning?
Yeah. Here is the episode quote: Lovecraft is family friendly.
All I'm saying is, tentacles are not an exclusive thing to Lovecraft.
No. What about deep sea? But anyway, deep sea horror as well, but I get off that.
Yeah, I digress. Anyway, you open with a woman named Esh who's wandering around in a sandstorm. She comes across these mysterious ruins and then gets pulled into the ground where she meets this mysterious force who tells her that this force can give her power. But she has to fix this force, and as you're going through the levels, you'll learn more about what's happened, you'll learn about the history of what's happened to this force, you'll learn about the history of the gods and stuff like that, and it's all unfolding in this narrative that's told in pieces as you open up more and more levels. And, you know, as an action platformer, it's solid. You know, it's got everything that you'd want in an action platformer, but... It's one of those ones where you mainly play because it has certain RPG elements, so you can become stronger, increase your health, stuff like that. So it does have those. It does have like a skill tree type thing.
Hyper Light Drifter is an RPG. There we go. There's another quote for the episode.
The thing about Sundered that I quite like is that the different environment is the coloration of different environments. I mean, you've seen from the video that you did earlier this month, there's sections where it's like completely red tones.
Yeah.
Right? But then there's sections where, the sections in the forest where it's complete forest and it's complete daylight and you see everything. There's others where it's a very kind of industrial setting. And the monsters, you know, you'll have your basic monsters that run around on the ground, then you've got these orbs, and then you've got more things, and you've got things that can fire from way, way, way off screen. You'll see these lines just go across the screen with arrows showing the direction that the missile, whatever it is, the laser beam, is coming from. And you basically have to just get out the way and then find whatever it is that's firing at you and take it out. But that means having to go back through different sections of... and different rooms to find whatever it is that's firing at you, take it out, and then go back to where you were so you can keep going, which is a ball ache and a half. Would have been nice if everything was kind of... Because in normal Metroidvania-type games, you'll have everything in one room, and you can take it out and then move on to the next place, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
In this one, it's like it's somewhere on that map area, somewhere where you've been before a monster has appeared, and you have to go back and take it out before you can keep going.
That's kind of frustrating.
But it's clever as well, because you are being forced to backtrack, but it's not the usual fetch quest type thing. You see what I mean?
Backtracking is backtracking, you know, for me.
Backtracking is backtracking, but I mean, at least they're saying that, you know, going forward, yes, you'll run into monsters, but also behind you, there's also monsters.
There will be monsters.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, when you clear an area and then it's empty, there's nothing there afterwards. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, it was always a weird thing of games that, you know, it was more of like an exercise of, look what we can do with our engine, rather than this makes sense for the game world, so we're going to do it.
Yeah. So anyway, Sundered I've been enjoying a lot. It does have a bit of a strange difficulty curve, though.
Yeah, these games tend to. Which leads me quite neatly to my last pick, which is Guacamelee 2. Now, Guacamelee, I have a very, very big soft spot for the original one of that, because it was part of sort of a triple bill of games that allowed me to discover indie games. You know, being a filthy console player, indie games were kind of a late discovery for me. So it was like a triple bill of the first Guacamelee, Limbo, and Stick It to the Man, where I was like, this is what indie games are. I know that's not the triple bill that you'd expect me to reference, but it is. So, you know, each to their own. But this one takes place 10 years after the first, and there's a character who's basically trying to take over the Mexiverse by getting a type of guacamole, which is going to make him... Oh, no, stuff. It doesn't matter. It's lots of Mexican puns and lots of universe jumping, and there's achievements. Well, there's like different universes, like the darkest universe, there's the all sorts of universe, and there's also the dankest universe, which is a universe made entirely of terrible memes from about four from about 4 years ago, and you get a trophy for doing it. But what it is a 2D Metroidvania game, which you have all sorts of powers. The main one is jumping between the living realm and the dead realm, and some of the puzzles, pardon my language here, but are absolute shit. There's like certain type of modern platformers where you have to basically have your fingers on four buttons and press them simultaneously. And, well, put it this way, I've become much more patient as an older gamer. When I was a kid, I threw my Nintendo 64 controller at the wall, and it had a funny jangling sound after playing the water dungeon level of Ocarina of Time.
And you did, or the controller did?
The controller did.
Right, okay.
The controller didn't throw me against the wall. That'd be sort of a very odd turning of the...
No, I was just checking, because you said, and I had a weird jangling noise.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure whether it was you or the controller.
I am actually a mechanical automaton, so we're really breaking walls down this week, aren't we? But yeah, it's quite hard, but it gets to the bits where you think, now you're just being mean. Like, the things that it makes you do. I mean, the checkpoints are quite regular, but it'll have these certain puzzles where you can miss it by tiny, 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 tiny little sliver. And it'll make you go back to the previous checkpoint. And you think, you salty sea dog. I actually found a new insult for a game while playing this. You know what I started calling the game?
What?
A filthy nipple. I started calling Guacamelee 2, you dirty, filthy nipple, I kept on saying. So, it's a special type of anger and frustration that makes you say things like that. But it's so well designed and so well paced, and it doles things out fairly, and it makes you feel powerful when it's supposed to and weak when it's not. So it's really well put together, but it's so frustrating. It's like one of these Twitch platformers, like your Celeste's, like your Super Meat Boys, while also being a Sundered or a Shovel Knight.
Yeah.
And it got slept on a lot because I think it's the Mexican puns. Oh man, the Mexican puns.
Yeah.
Well, it's called the Mexiverse instead of the Multiverse.
Who was it who developed it?
Drinkbox Studios.
And where are they based?
He's asking me questions now, isn't he? Toronto.
Okay. I was hoping they'd be based like Mexico City.
Guadalajara, Mexico.
Yeah.
If only, yeah.
I was hoping something like that. Being based in Toronto.
But it's still, it's not mocking and having fun at the expense of Mexico. It's allowing the characters to have some sort of real authority and some power. Because honestly, outside of, I mean, jokey as it is, it does touch on things like Dia de los Muertos really nicely.
Yeah.
And it also gives, I can't name any other game where you can play as a Mexican lead. I don't know what it is.
Oh, I suppose in a sense it's like what was that movie? Not the Disney Pixar one. That was all about Day of the Dead. You know the other one by the makers of Box Trolls.
It wasn't by them. It was by somebody else. But it was.
Oh, by someone else. But it was similar kind of tone.
I'll put the thing in the top hand and I'll Google it when he's talking and then interrupt him rudely and it'll throw him off his gate. But I know what you mean. It looked gorgeous. And it was produced by Guillermo del Toro.
Yes, that's the one. That's the one. It's you know, it sounds like that where it's more celebrating Mexico than...
It's incredibly goofy, but it's celebratory of Mexico. Yeah.
And I like games like that.
And not everything has to be righteous when it's celebrating something from the first time, because that's
kind of shallow, you can mock things that you're celebrating as well.
Yeah. Well, have fun with it. Yeah. I can understand why people don't get on with it, but I have a great deal of affection for Guacamelee.
Yeah.
It's the same as me with Guns Gone Cannoli. I don't know why, but I like these things that are just really broad and silly.
Oh, God, yeah. I remember the beer-flinging leprechauns with balloons.
Yeah.
As in, they're floating on... They've got these you know, party balloons, not hot air balloons or anything like that. Party balloons,
and they're speaking,
and they're floating across the level. They're speaking in a very Irish brogue, and they're attached to these party balloons floating across the screen. They're throwing bottles at you.
As somebody with Irish heritage, I can appreciate that as a dumb joke.
Yeah.
But moving on.
Yes. Moving on, cultural appropriation being the topic of conversation now, it seems.
Yes. And now I'm going to interrupt you by finding out what that movie was. Go ahead.
Yeah. Moving on to, I don't know. Is Sleeping Dogs cultural appropriation?
Well, it was an American it was a French studio, wasn't it?
It was United Front Games, and it was published by Square Enix. But the game is set in Hong Kong.
That's okay.
And I mean, what I would say is that they picked a lot of... What was it? You know, the actors who played the roles?
Yeah. I mean, it's got John Cho in, hasn't it, as the lead guy?
Yeah, exactly. And they've got a lot of talent, like Chinese-American talent and Chinese talent in there.
Yeah.
So I think on that front, I think they're okay. They're on solid footing. And I've got to say, I played Sleeping Dogs on the PS3, and this is the definitive version on the PS4, which I haven't really played. And I got around to playing it last month.
The Book of Life.
And... That was it, the Book of Life. But anyway, I really like Sleeping Dogs. I've really liked it since it came out on the PS3.
Did you play the DLC that the reissue comes with?
I haven't played the DLC yet.
I'm
playing through...
It takes like 90 minutes of pop, but I think they really add sort of flavour to that game.
Yeah. The thing that I've always loved about... this goes back to Shenmue, right? Shenmue 2 in particular. And I've always maintained that Shenmue wasn't the game that made Shenmue popular. It was Shenmue 2. That's the one that basically cemented the whole idea of Shenmue in the minds of fans, because Shenmue 2 was so very different. It was so much bigger, so much more expansive, so much more detailed. You could go through different areas of Hong Kong, and Sleeping Dogs starts off in Aberdeen. And you know what? When I first played Sleeping Dogs on the PS3, I was going, this place looks familiar. Why do I know this? It's Hong Kong? Wait, which part of Hong Kong is this? I've seen this before. And playing it on the PS4 with much better graphics, more detail and everything like that, I'm going, I know that place. I've seen that place.
It's not much better graphics on PS4. It still looks like a PlayStation 3 game.
It looks like an upscaled PlayStation 3 game.
Yeah, it does. Rather
than the game that came out on the PlayStation 3, it does look like it's been upscaled. And the thing is, I don't mind that. Because aside from a few odd bits when you're actually fighting against other characters, you know, and it messes around with the collision detection a little bit. So you might throw a punch and it might not connect.
Yeah, but know. It's also got grisly executions, so you know that wins. That sort of counterbalances it.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way to win fights in this is not to hit people, it's just to grab them and slam them into the ground.
Yeah, but they don't allow you to do that until you've taken off a certain amount of damage.
No, I mean, most of the NPCs allow you to do that. It's just the bosses don't allow you to do that. Yeah. The bosses will basically back off, so you have to just counter the bosses until you can grab them and slam them into the ground.
Yeah. And when I say executions, it's kind of like you punch with square and you reverse with triangle.
Triangle.
And it'll give you these opportunities where you can grab someone and you can sort of bum rush them to something.
Yeah, the environmental takedowns. It's like heat mode in Yakuza. When you can the final move in Yakuza when you basically you can grab the sign and smash it over the head or something like that.
Yeah.
When with Sleeping Dogs you can grab someone, and I mean I was fighting one set of guys and I was basically shoving his face into the ventilation fan.
Yeah. With the heat modes, apparently they're okay, but he does some nasty stuff to him. In Sleeping Dogs
there's no blood though, there's no blood. That's the thing. In Sleeping Dogs, there's blood, and that's the difference.
He just outright murders them in Sleeping Dogs.
And he's just like, wow.
So he's dead then.
Yeah.
He's not getting up from there.
They no move no more.
I think that, I know, I'm not spoiling anything here, but I think the final boss, he kicks him into an ice chipper.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's not getting up from that.
And the other thing I like about Sleeping Dogs, though, is there are, you know, the missions, a lot of the missions are called favors, and you go around doing favors for people. And basically, see, this is the thing: unless you've been reading a lot of Chinese stuff, like I have, right? A lot of people probably don't understand what face is all about, right?
I think it's like a reputation sort of place in society. I think people get that, and losing face means you lose your place in society, you lose your position, and.
Not quite. That is part of it, you know, but that's not all of it. You know, because you can basically see face is an almost tangible thing in that culture. Yes, is a reflection of where society and your place in it. But, you know, when you slap someone's face, because you can't slap someone's reputation, right?
I'm not.
Do you see what I mean?
I'm going to let you have your moment because, yeah, I don't want to peel that apart.
Yeah. I know that sounds like a euphemism.
Yeah.
I can see by the look on your face, you're just resisting the urge to make a joke.
I'm
there.
Being a good boy, so you okay?
But anyway, you. I can't say it with a straight face now because he's got the stupid grin in his face.
It's the only face I've got. which is the Western meaning of face, you know. I'm not
by doing these favors. By doing these favors, you gain more face. You know, you gain more reputation, you gain more status within the gang and within the community, things like that. But those favors aren't necessarily favors because there are, you know, you might think you're doing a favor, but then you'll end up getting mugged and have to chase them down and have to beat up the bad guys who've just mugged you.
You need face to buy certain items in shops as well, like certain level of face.
Yeah. Like legendary outfits and stuff like that, and different outfits will, you know, have different effects on you. So something like a vest and baggy jeans and fake Converse trainers will give you...
The fashion, though. The fashion is so 2007.
Yes, it is.
Like baggy pants and baseball caps and vests. It's like, where's the non-dirt bag version of this character?
I mean, the thing is, I like Wei Shen as a character. I think Wei Shen is... I think the way they've scripted him and the backstory he's got is actually really interesting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's little interactions he has when you collect jade statues and take him to your old Sifu.
Yeah.
Them adds colour and texture and character that I really like.
Yeah. And that whole intro as well to the game, it still gets me. It is arguably one of the better intros I've seen for a game since the PS3 came out, because that whole intro starts off with a sting operation. This is the very beginning of the game, so it's not really a spoiler.
Yeah.
You know, and the game's been out since the PS3, so you basically, there's a sting operation going on, and there's a deal going down, but then a security guard accidentally walks in. He gets killed by a guy with a butcher's knife, and you and your partner have to go running away from the cops. And this is in Aberdeen, in Hong Kong. Yeah. When I say Aberdeen, there's an area of Hong Kong called Aberdeen.
It's not where all the Scottish people are.
Just in case, it's like a port area, So anyway, first time I found out about Aberdeen, actually, was in a cartoon anime called 3x3 Eyes.
Okay, that's helpful.
Has nothing to do with what we're talking about. Anyway, that intro, it really shows you, you know, it's a basic tutorial showing you how to jump, vault over objects, and basically you have to follow your partner, and eventually you get arrested, and then you discover that you are an undercover cop.
Yeah, I think it's Tom Wilkinson plays your handler.
Yeah, and...
who you know as that guy from that thing, that English guy from that thing.
Yeah, the problem with upscaling PS3 graphics is it makes the animation a little bit weird, and it started looking, you know, when it's doing all the conversation bits, especially when you're talking to your handler, it looks a bit like the PS3 version of L.A. Noire.
Yeah. What's like really detailed faces on stick bodies?
No, it's like, you know how they made the mouths move but didn't make the eyes move.
Oh,
and
right,
so
yeah,
it looks like a corpse talking.
I know.
It's like that.
But yeah, I mean, I do think you should play the DLC. One of them is about hopping vampires.
Oh yeah,
the second one, that's really fun. And I can't remember the first one. I think there's like a kidnapping, and you have to go to the monastery. I can't remember. The first one's kind of nondescript, but the second one with the hopping vampires and the demons, the Chinese demons, that's really cool.
So. Here's a question. Didn't they announce a film adaptation of Sleeping Dogs?
They also announced the MMO, and it just didn't have the support, and it just kind of fell apart.
Yeah, because if I remember rightly, Donnie Yen was supposed to play the role of Wei Shen, wasn't he?
It kind of looks like him. It looks like it'd be modelled after him, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. But I don't know if Donnie Yen could get away with playing Wei Shen, because... He's a bit too old now. I think you'd want a younger actor to play the role.
He probably Wu Jing would play it now.
Yeah, but yeah, I would love to see a Sleeping Dogs movie. Sleeping Dogs is one of those games where you could easily see it as a movie.
Yeah,
I mean, the environments are so detailed, and when we did that episode of Impossible Mission about art, and I was talking about Sleeping Dogs, the environments in there, photorealism versus art.
Yeah,
and the environments, you know, Hong Kong itself in Sleeping Dogs is something to behold. I would say that it's just going around Hong Kong in Sleeping Dogs is amazing.
Yeah, that's it. This is a monthly show about the games we've been playing last month with none of the control of our other shows.
Let us know what you've been playing in this past month in the comments below. And if you like the video, then give us a thumb, a sub, or a bell. And if you want to see more videos like this, then you can support us on Patreon. The details are in the description.
Until next time, this has been... What is it now? This has been November Monthly Marmalade.
It's We're in December now, so this has been our marmalade for November, yeah.
The games that we played in November. So we'll see you in the next episode. Ooh, in 2021 now. That sounds... Yeah, to hell with 2020. Let's march on with upwards. 2021 will be the year where we get more PlayStation 5 and Xbox footage, but until then, thanks for watching.
Hey everybody, this is Quentin Flynn, and you are tuned in to The Geek Show. It rocks. You roll. Got it memorized?
I'm Graham Williamson, and I like films starring pop stars. I like films about pop stars. I like films which have set design by pop stars. Probably gone a bit far there, I can't actually think of one of those. Anyway, this is why I've launched The Geek Show's new podcast, Pop Screen, where every week, me and a guest host take a look at one film, either starring by or about a pop star, and by pop I could mean anything from heavy metal to blues to disco to hip-hop, and we analyse it relentlessly, asking all of the big questions.
Ewan, who's your favourite Spice Girl?
Oh no. Can I say Richard E. Grant's my favourite Spice Girl?
And even giving some of the big answers with our unparalleled level of research and nerdishness.
I'm definitely a Beatles fan. I was on a Beatles tour taxi in Liverpool with my family, and the tour guide started referring to me for little details and to double check his facts.
So, whether you're an absolute beginner or a 24-hour party person, get swept away. I'll stop doing this now, I promise. By Pop Screen, the new podcast from the Geek Show Podcast Network. It's about music, it's about movies, it's about nonsense. We're hosted on Audioboom and available on your podcast provider of choice, as well as the Geek Show's YouTube channel. Remember to like and subscribe.
And welcome to Impossible Mission for another bout of saucy video game talk. That makes it sound like we're sort of Babe Station, but with games. So, Game Station, which was a UK games like video shop once upon a time.
Yeah, it was.
That's not what they were, though.
Well, anyhow. They weren't video games, you know, attached to poles in the middle of the shop.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's actually been a thing somewhere. But it is actually kind of a weird, kind of haphazard segue, though.
It is, bizarrely.
I didn't intend that segue quite so neatly, but what we want to talk about this week on Impossible Mission here on The Geek Show, click like, subscribe and all that guff, is product placement in games.
Yeah, product placement. Well, not just product placement, but advertising in the wider sense as well.
I know, but it's kind of a catch-all term, isn't it? Product placement.
Yeah, product. Well, yeah.
In this context, anyway.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you've got very specific examples of product placement, and some.
Can I just introduce the concept with what made me think, hang on, this is clearly.
Yeah.
I mean, if you listen to our sister show, Monthly Marmalade, there's two episodes where I've talked about Judgment. Loved it, by the way. But there's a thing in Yakuza games, which is the engine it uses, where you go to restaurants in the area. In Judgment, there's a system where you make friends with people. And I think there's one towards the north end of the city, towards the north end of Kamurocho, called Ikanari Steak. And you know when there's like a random like person who's just there? Like, that's just random graphic face, man. That could be anybody. You know what I mean? And then there's the person who you make friends with at Ikanari Steak, who is the most lovingly rendered graphics on his face. Like, clearly, he's been in for a mocap session. Is that sort of detail? And he talks about the corporate philosophy at Ikanari Steak, how it values the customer first, and it does everything cheap, so they don't rip off the customers, and all of the steaks are the best quality steaks. And here's me, playing it, thinking, hang on a minute. Hang on a minute. Ikanari Steak, a real thing. Sort of Googled it, and there it is.
Yeah.
They've basically planted a free mission thing in Judgment, which is an advert for the Ikanari Steak of restaurants in, chain of restaurants in Japan. And I thought, wow, product placements kind of sneakily got into my games. I don't like this.
Well, it's kind of always been there.
It has, but not like a literal advert like that in the story arcs, I guess.
Well, it depends.
Not in that sort of sneaky way. It's not even that sneaky. In Japan, it wouldn't have been kind of direct, wouldn't it?
Yeah. See, it's sneaky for us because we're not aware of the brand. But if you're aware of the brand, then it doesn't become sneaky. It's basically more overt. And we've had the equivalent of those, right? See, if I basically walked up to any gamer right now and said, hey, there used to be this really interesting platform game from when I was a kid, right? From like the early 90s to mid 90s. And you basically played as a red dot with arms and legs. It was called Cool Spot. And you know what? It was a lot of fun. Do you know that, kids? It was a lot of fun. No, it wasn't, because it basically was 7-Up advert. The entire game was an advert for 7-Up.
Yeah, I mean, I can speak to that, liking that game a lot more because it was aimed at my generation.
Yeah.
You were a bit more...
I was older.
You're a bit saltier and a bit more seasoned.
Yeah, I was older and more bitter. let's be honest.
Yeah, I was, ooh, you play as a cool spot with shades on. It's the 90s. That must mean he's radical, dude.
Yes, that was literally the marketing campaign.
But yeah, it was a decent game, you know. But
yeah, it was a decent platform game.
It was all over the place in the 90s.
It was.
Try to hide it.
Do you remember Gremlin had a character called Zool? The ninja from the nth dimension.
Yeah.
Well, there was...
Somebody bring back Zool. Zool was cool.
Yeah, but Zool had an amazing kind of sponsorship deal with what I call Chupa Chups, but I've been reliably informed is pronounced Chupa Chups.
Whoever said that, right, take him one side.
No. Do you know how it was explained to me? They said, it's not Chupa Chups, it's Chupa Chups, because it's... Basically, like, I think it's Spanish or Portuguese or something like that. And they said, you don't say chupacabra, you say chupacabra.
Yeah, but here's the thing. In Italy, Florence isn't called Florence.
No. Nope.
It's called Firenze.
Yeah.
Cologne isn't called Cologne. It's called Cologne.
Yeah.
So there's English versions of words and there's Spanish, but, French, Italian, German versions of words.
Exactly. But it's the Hunter x Hunter thing all over again.
Okay, if you're going to be like that, you're not allowed to call it Bangkok anymore. You Google it and you try and pronounce that word if you're going to be like that.
I'm not going
to. Seriously, Google the real name for Bangkok. It is not a pronounceable word in the English tongue. It's about 45 letters long. It's obscene. Have you just Googled it?
I'm actually looking for it now.
Because it's...
all right, Krung Thep Maha Nakhon. Or simply Krung Thep. I agree with the Thai people. Just call it Krung Thep and leave it.
Yeah, but the point is, yeah.
No, I'm just saying. Anyway, we kind of got off the track there because somebody was angry about Chupa Chups or Chupa Chups or whatever you want to call it.
Chupa Chups. Yeah.
So anyway, Zool, very obvious product placement there for Chupa Chups, because you can't really hide Chupa Chups. It's actually words. You can't hide it with cool visuals or anything like that. It's not like a hidden stealth Apple logo somewhere. It just says Chupa Chups written in big letters.
Yeah, it's not like this really odd level where Zool goes to one side and then he starts using his Bing search engine.
Exactly.
And you think, what are you doing, Zool? What are you doing? You're supposed to be a superhero. It's no superheroes this stupid.
I mean, there are some very subtle... bits of product placement. Uncharted 3, for example, had some Subway product placement, which you've totally forgotten, and I've only remembered because I found it in an article when I was doing the prep for this episode, and it was talking about there's bits where there's Subway uniforms and some signs and posters about Subway meals, and
I'm not sure whether that was in the English version.
It's in a variety of versions of the game.
Okay, that's kind of skipped me. But that's more in line with what movie product placement is, really, isn't it?
Well, I mean...
There's bad examples of movie product placement where I think it was Transformers, where it had, like, a soft drink vending machine turned into a Transformer, which was kind of just very dumb. But most cases in movies, it's just here is a character who's using an Apple laptop or using a certain brand's phone or something which exists in that world where they're sort of integrating it and making the world believable.
Yeah, apparently the soft drink owners weren't happy with that product placement of their of their product in the Transformers movie, because the message it was sending was, drink this, otherwise we'll kill you.
Yeah, there's a bit in Blue Velvet which might be my favourite bit of product placement, but I'm not sure whether it's product placement or David Lynch just being a bit weird. It could be both.
Yeah.
I think it's Blue Pabst or Budweiser or Heineken, some American beer brand. It just the way it's integrated. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, my point is, it's integrated into the world and how we use things.
Yeah, I mean, there's an interesting bit of product placement integration that happened recently. And I'm not on about the one that everyone's thinking of because it's been in the news. What I'm on about is Monster Energy and Death Stranding.
That was kind of... It wasn't just that in Death Stranding, though, was it? It was famously, no. There was an advert for Norman Reedus' new show there too.
There was. But the Monster Energy drink was what he drank to basically maintain his like stamina levels and stuff like that as he's out in the wilderness. And I thought, okay, you know, it's a blatant advert for Monster Energy, but it kind of makes sense in this kind of context.
Yeah, but it doesn't have any of the withdrawal things, does it, where you have too much Monster Energy and you've gotten a caffeine and sugar kick and you kind of go a bit crazy.
You only get that if you're not burning the energy off. He is burning the energy off in the game, so...
Because that'd be an interesting side, spinning a tail, wouldn't it?
Yeah, Norman Reed is just bouncing across a mountain.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That'd be sort of, if people think, I should say, if Hideo Kojima is the person that people think he is, I'd expect him to do something like that, but.
Thing is, it made more sense. I think I'll give them plaudit, I'll give them credit where it's due. Using Monster Energy in that context made more sense than using something like Pepsi or Coke or something like that. Yeah?
It exists within the rules of the world. Yeah. You know?
Exactly.
It's like product placement has been forever in games because sports games have been a thing.
Yeah. And
I mean, imagine the idea of FIFA or a PES or NHL, NFL, whatever, and it's got off-brand things around the outside. Because once upon a time, in the Mega Drive era, that was the thing.
Not just in the Mega Drive era, the early FIFA games had that as well, because they couldn't actually put all of the product placement, you know, all of the signboards that go around the edge of the pitch. They couldn't use the official ones because they hadn't actually negotiated the deals. So you had several early FIFA games where the signs around it were just like EA Sports or EA or something like that, and that was it.
Oh, that's a pity. So they don't have like Nipsey and Bocanola.
No. They don't have any of those.
Zycrosoft.
But in the modern FIFA games, all of that is there. All of that paraphernalia, all of that advertising, the advertising hoardings are all there.
It's incredibly wide-ranging as well, because you very rarely, unless you're paying attention, get the same thing in the two matches on the bounce.
Exactly. But then FIFA, well, EA kind of took it a step too far. Which
you see, what he's referring to is the adverts.
Yeah, the ones in UFC and stuff like that.
But before I heard about it, I thought it was like it is in certain WWE games where here is a replay and this replay is sponsored by Snickers. Because that's kind of, it's putting in some sort of real life application of how replays are done.
Yeah.
Replays usually have like a little bit of a sponsor bar underneath it.
Yeah. But it was taking that to a level where it was really intrusive and basically broke the immersion in the game. So you could be heavily invested into a career mode in the game, but then all of a sudden this massive replay is sponsored by so-and-so, plastered all over the game.
It was the boys, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the boys.
Amazon Prime's the boys.
Even though the UFC ring, right, the octagon, the floor of the octagon, is a big advert for season 2 of The Boys.
Yeah.
So on top of that, you've got replays that are also sponsored by The Boys and actually advertising The Boys, and then you have actual advertisements for The Boys on top of that as well. So
I wanted you to watch The Boys.
Yeah. So there was a lot of adverts for The Boys. And do you know the weird thing, right? Do you remember the movie Tenet?
Yeah, I hated that this year. Right. Christopher Nolan, yeah.
The marketing team for that actually did a very similar thing, by which I mean they actually advertised in a video game, and it was Fortnite they advertised
in. Yeah, that was weird, wasn't it? Yeah, because Fortnite is kind of, it's beloved by children the world over.
But you know,
at the end of the day, it's a big vehicle for adverts, because the amount of times it's had, like, I don't know, an Avengers special event.
Yeah.
You said Tenet.
Yeah.
It was a trailer that was from Tenet in Fortnite, wasn't it?
Exactly. And
but yeah, Fortnite is just this vehicle for cross-promotional things. And jumping on the cross-promotional thing, That's happening a lot. I mean, Mortal Kombat is not the place where you'd expect to see product placement.
It depends. I mean, if it's like a knife company or a gun company or some kind of weapons manufacturer, you know, maybe some.
There is a way they could do it.
Maybe something that does protective gear or something.
Maybe there is a way to do it, you know, with the friendships. So you put some weird things in the friendships instead of the fatalities, the friendships, you know. But no, it had like Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator in it.
Yeah.
Which was a cross-promotional way of including whatever Terminator abomination that they've got on the cinemas at that time.
But then they took it a step further and they started just including all sorts of random ones that have no product, that aren't product placement. They're just extra characters because, hey, if we can include the Terminator, that means we can have, like, the Predator, we can have the Alien, we can have all sorts of other things. Let's have all.
That all makes sense. You know, they're all... Terminator, I mean, Predator and... even Terminator. Terminator, Predator and Alien. As how they interact with the world, and how violent they are. They are very much in Mortal Kombat's wheelhouse.
Yeah. And do you know what? I kind of love the fact that Mortal Kombat is going down that route, because eventually we can have all the movie bad guys just fighting each other to the death to see who is the ultimate movie bad guy. It'll be celebrity deathmatch all over again.
Yeah. But product placement, I think, is getting to this point now where once upon a time, it used to be an ugly thing. It used to be like an ugly term, and it still is. There's still occasions where it's done in an ugly way.
Yeah. See, the interesting thing about what you mentioned with the Mortal Kombat thing, right, it does remind me that product placement has, that sort of cross-promotional thing, has been around in mobile gaming for a long, long time.
Yeah, special events, usually, yeah. That's what they term them as.
The special events and all sorts of things like that. And also, you had, like, key things in, when I was playing Final Fantasy XIV a lot, you had key events when Final Fantasy XIII was coming out, for example. You had events related to Final Fantasy XIII,
yeah,
as a kind of a promotional thing. So in-house promotion does happen with video games, where they advertise, where the developer or the publisher can advertise other games that they're doing within a game.
Yeah, it's I don't know who does it. Warner Brothers are very good at that.
Yeah,
they're not very good. That's kind of complimenting them. They're quite consistent with that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How you play Batman Arkham Asylum or Arkham whatever, and you get stuff from Mordor, the Shadow of game, sorry.
Yeah.
It's the future. Yeah. The future of product placement in video games. I think there's going to be companies who are completely crass about it. Given how, this is another topic altogether, but the microtransactions that companies like EA and 2K do, I think they're absolutely cavalier upfront and unapologetic about the ways in which they make money and get money injected into their games. They're not going to change. They're completely upfront in all of the ugly ways that entails. So that's going to exist.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I think it's just going to be like it is in movies, really.
I mean,
like, especially in the narrative stuff where here is a character and the characters use stuff in their normal life. So yeah. Let's have that normal, those normal aspects of their lives be branded normal aspects of their life, if you get me.
Yeah, I do. There is one particular type of game where I don't think that can fit, and that the entire game is basically just a walking product placement.
What's that?
Racing games.
Well, that's like sports games though, isn't it?
Well, not exactly. See, racing games by their nature are, and I'm talking about any type of racing game where you have real world cars in. Because each one of those cars, they so lovingly pan across the car at the shiniest angle, you know, and so you can see it at its sleekest, you know, you can see the curves and that. And then they rev the engine a couple of times to get you excited.
That is product placement. That is product placement. But when it's including touring cars, and touring cars are basically just, here is a big vehicle which is just adverse. These adverts, yeah. Look at all the adverts on this big advert transportation device. Yes,
exactly. A lot of actual racing ones are like that. But the racing games that I'm talking about are stuff like the Forza games, the street racing games, that sort of thing. I'm playing Asphalt Legends on my phone, and a lot of the cars in Asphalt Legends are basically like that. They're just, you know, the real world cars are based on real world cars, and they have all of the names and all the hallmarks of it, but it's a mobile game. You know, so they've basically got some sort of arrangement with the manufacturers for the usage rights to these cars. and the names of these cars and the images of these cars. And it's basically a promotion for those cars. But one of the things that I do know is that with those games, where it's not like a proper full-on sports racing game, where it's more of a street racing game, with those, one of the things that that is part of the deal with the developers is that they don't show the crash damage.
Yeah, that's the thing which I think ended Burnout.
Yeah.
Honestly.
I think that's one of the things that happened with Burnout as well.
Because Gran Turismo was, the people were complaining for a long time, says, oh, these games are great, but why isn't there any crash damage? And I think the guy who developed it, I can't remember his name, but it's not important. He basically came out and said, yeah, we can't do that because the companies who develop these cars won't let us.
Yep.
Which, going back to Burnout doesn't have real cars. It just has like sort of generic off-brand things.
Yeah.
And that's not really within the ethos of EA, is it, who put it out? To have generic off-brand things. They're trying to make money everywhere they can. So I'm just putting words into EA's mouth, but let's be honest, it's not much of an exaggeration when it comes to that company.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that because they can't make money that way, potential profit is limited.
Well, when you're talking about cars in racing games, there is one particular racing game that I can think of where you wouldn't think that you'd see product placement related to cars, right?
Wacky Races.
No.
Mario Kart.
Yep. But they did it. Mercedes, Mario Kart 8, and I think it was also possibly in Mario Maker. Mario Kart 8, though, definitely. They basically made a deal with Mercedes, and they included, I think it was two or three Mercedes models in Mario Kart 8.
Yeah, vaguely recall something like that, yeah.
So you got this picture of Mario sitting proudly in this super deformed Mercedes. By super deformed, I don't mean that it's twisted out of shape. Super deformed is a term relating to anime where it means it's shrunken down and looks cuter.
Cutesy.
Yeah.
Funko Pop version of it.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. So, I don't know, product placement is just one of these things you're going to kind of have to get used to because... Especially with games costing what they do and they're trying to get as much money out of people as they do.
Yeah.
I think once this idea that... Because honestly, this whole idea of games being £70 RRP, I think that is going to bite them because people aren't prepared to pay that much. So more people will wait longer to play it, and only the hardcore, which isn't as many people as studios and developers would like to think, will get the games early. Generally, people will wait. So as far as the developers are concerned and the publishers are concerned, that's lost money that because people will wait until it's cheaper. So to make some money back, they'll look at other ways to get income from these titles.
Yeah.
And the obvious one, elephant in the room, is product placement.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, sometimes the product placement can go a bit too far.
Yeah, it's kind of like selling your soul in some cases.
Right, because, you know, I was just praising Kojima about the usage of Monster and saying, look, it fits the environment. It works in that context.
It fits the story that's been told, yeah.
Yeah. There was a game where the product placement didn't fit the environment of the story being told. That was Metal Gear Peace Walker.
Can't remember that.
Right, Metal Gear Peace Walker was on the PSP. It's one of those ones that a lot of Metal Gear fans, unless they had a PSP, probably haven't played. I have, and I do remember some of the product placement in there, and some of it was... So you don't really think about it when you're playing the game. It's only afterwards you're like, why would you have a pack of Doritos in the jungle?
You wouldn't.
Not only... There was even worse there. Mountain Dew was in there, and for some reason... Now, in this country, we have a different name for it, but it is basically the same thing as what the Americans have. It's basically it's a certain type of body spray that's used that they advertise as attracting all of the ladies, which
Lynx.
Yeah,
Lynx Africa, especially.
They call it Axe body spray in America.
Is that what that is?
Yeah,
there's a gag from Frankie Boyle, a Serbic Glaswegian comedian, in case you're listening internationally, who called it the teenage smell of desperation.
Well, that's what Americans call it as well.
All right.
So, yeah, I mean, why would you, when you're out on a mission, why would you suddenly find random packs of Doritos bottles of Mountain Dew and cans of Axe body spray.
Yeah, I think to wrap up, I think it's going to be one of these things that will slowly sneak its way into mainstream gaming, honestly.
What, the cans of Axe body spray?
Well, that too, but yeah, just generally product placement, like characters used in certain things.
Well, I think it's going to go both ways.
Games that, the only games that can really survive it is historical ones.
Yeah, but
I can't see, like, Wolfenstein 3 having, like, sponsors for top shelf jazz mags or
right.
something.
Look, all I'm going to say is I actually think the trend is going to go both ways, right? I think that you're going to have a lot more product placement in games, but you're also going to have famous video game characters actually sponsoring stuff. So I would say it's only a matter of a couple of years before...
Well, that coming back, you mean? That used to be huge in the 90s.
Yeah, but I reckon that's a... thing is, it never really went away because you have, over in Japan, anime characters still sponsoring stuff and still advertising stuff, right?
I doubt that.
There's a big market for it. So it hasn't really gone away. It's just moved to a different country. And it will make its way back to Western shores. I would say it's only a matter of time before you see Mario tearing into a drumstick and going, that's finger licking good.
Mario sounds different. Mario sounds weird, Rob.
While dressed as the Colonel.
Mario sounds weird. Why does he sound like he's from the north of England?
I don't know what's happened. But Mario dressed as the Colonel eating a piece of chicken. You know, it works in my head. I don't know if it works in anyone else's head, but it works in my head. The only reason I say that is because, and I've got to crowbar this in, but I didn't intend to, but it's kind of ended up that way because of Hatsune Miku.
Just before you say that, Sonic shilled for everything in the 90s.
Yeah.
I'm going to put that out there.
Sonic was a corporate shill. Right. And I know the Sonic fans are not happy to hear me say that, but during the 90s, Sonic was a total corporate shill. Okay.
He hired himself out for everything. Yeah.
If you don't believe me, you go back and look at the history, right? You look at the history. Sonic had no choice in the matter. They made him do it.
You could see a single tear roll down his eye.
The proof of that was when you played the games and you saw the cold, dead eyes. You know, that's why Sonic Adventure 2 didn't work properly.
Exactly.
His heart wasn't in it.
Breaking news here. But Hatsune Miku.
Hey, the third-party Nintendo stuff, including that included, like, Zelda. Oh, sorry, Link. Yeah.
Hatsune Miku.
Anyway, Hatsune Miku still actually advertises a variety of things. You know,
that's an avatar, isn't it? It's only casually adjacent to video games, Hatsune Miku.
Well, I mean, you've got like the Project Diva games and stuff like that, but the actual character itself and the other characters that make up the Vocaloid thing, they all have their own little kind of sponsorship niches. They're all corporate niches. Hatsune Miku, I mean, one of the tracks that gets loads of people in Japan, you know, popping away, bizarrely enough, is the song that was done for vegetable juice.
Oh, Japan.
Because it was all over TVs. And the first time, I remember the first time I saw the, you know, they do the holograph concerts for them now, right?
Yeah.
The holographic concerts. And then all of a sudden, it suddenly went poppy, poppy, pop, poppy, pop. And everyone went batshit crazy. And I'm going, what the hell's going on? So I had to actually look this up to find out what the deal was. Found out it was about vegetable juice that became really popular after they started using Hatsune Miku to advertise the vegetable juice.
Japan is basically a big advert as a country.
Yeah, but because of the influence of Animu over in the West now, it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, and beloved titles like Naruto, One Piece, all of this, Dragon Ball, they advertise stuff too.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's just the stuff you're not interested in.
I will say one thing, though. There is one product that I wish they would use Dragon Ball to advertise.
Go on.
Soap.
Dragon Ball soap?
No, just soap in general. Any type of soap. Because none of the characters in Dragon Ball ever wash. At least Luffy and them get dunked in water every so often. But none of the characters in Dragon Ball. All that manly sweating and none of them ever wash.
So it's going to have a fight, and then Goku's going to rub himself down with some Dove or something.
Can you imagine the stench, though? That you could kill somebody.
This is going to just go on forever now. So I think we're going to. He's found a rich vein. This is his stand up routine. He's planning, apparently.
I don't do stand up. Well,
yeah, he does.
Unless I want to move somewhere else.
See, he's working on his routine. We've got to stop him, people. We've got to stop him.
See, now that I've said Dragon Balls, Dragon Balls and so, that just sounds wrong. Oh.
So, in this week's episode, we learned that to get your Dragon Balls super squeaky and clean, Goku suggests that you use this soap. So, until next time, though.
So, that note, if you liked this video, then give us a thumb, a sub, or a bell. And if you want to see more videos like this, then please support us on Patreon. The details are in the description.
That's all from Impossible Mission this week, thankfully. Join us every Thursday for more video game chit-chat. Until next time, though, thank you for watching.